Hey everybody, it's Dr. Joe Camerata here. And before we get into the podcast, I just had one quick ask, and that is if you enjoy our podcast, go ahead and take 1 second to rate our show 5 stars. It would mean the world to me, and it would really help to get the word out to the rest of the people that we are trying to reach. I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I thank you so much. What is up, everybody? This is Dr. Joe Camerata with Across the Continuum podcast, and I'm here with easily the strongest chiropractor I've ever met, Dr. Cameron Clouser. Thanks for coming on, Cam. Do you mind introducing yourself and telling us who you are?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, first of all. I'm really excited for this. Obviously, we've known each other for a little bit, so it's kind of cool to be able to actually, you know, do something that's kind of bringing our two companies obviously you technically own at this point, and one that I work for kind of together. So as you kind of mentioned, my name is Cameron Clouser. I am a chiropractor for a healthcare system in Virginia Beach called Sentara, full-time there. And then if anybody else potentially knows me, I am also a coach for Barbell Medicine on the rehab side and the performance side. So I actually do both sides, which is pretty fun. Other than that, you know, I've been in practice for almost 3 years now. So kind of coming up on actually kind of knowing what I'm doing in some fashion, I guess. But, you know, still learning, obviously. So that's kind of the quick introduction, I guess you could say.
I think I felt the same way at 3 years.
Yeah.
And now we're at 7 years and I'm still not sure if I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. It never really gets easier, honestly.
No, I mean, it's a bummer. The more I look, the more I don't know. But I think the first thing that I wanted to point out was the reason that you're by far the strongest chiropractor I've ever met. Not that I've met a ton of chiropractors, but I feel like if I had, they still wouldn't. I have a number written on my desk here, which is the amount of weight that you rep for 20 repetitions on deadlift as recent as a couple of months ago. It's 480 pounds, which is there an update to that number?
Unfortunately, no. I finally made the jump to 500 the following week, and then it was about 4 subsequent weeks after that. I started at 14, got 13, then 12, and then 11. And I was like, okay, something's got to change. I'm obviously not progressing my performance anymore. So I took a step back and I haven't been back to the 20s just yet. I've also had a few other issues that have arisen since that little trial run. So I'm kind of working through those currently as well. So unfortunately, no. Maybe one day I'll finally get that 500, but for now, no.
No close. I mean, yeah. In and of itself, doing any deadlift for 20 repetitions sounds like a nightmare, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it was.
If anybody follows you on Instagram, it's like amazing to watch that. The running joke in powerlifting is like anything over 3 repetitions or anything over 5 repetitions is cardio. And seeing you do 480 pounds and work your way up in a very systematic way, like a true linear progression, mm-hmm. was nutty. And not only that, but you also have had to have deadlifted well over 700 pounds in the past, right?
Yeah. So my best, I guess, belted, you know, call it belted competition deadlift is 725. On an Ohio power bar, which whatever, if you want to compare deadlift to Ohio power bar, whatever. Honestly, I pull about the same on each one, so it doesn't really matter. And then, you know, I paused 700 a few times. And then I pulled 700 plus a few other times, but never past 725. So it's been quite a while since I've been around 700 though. Probably going on about a year and a half since I touched anywhere near that. So
dude, still. And I think part of the skill set needed to even get there, aside from just being built different, is like going into training with a certain type of intensity, which is what I wanted to talk about today, because we had a conversation at the pain and rehab seminar in Bozeman for Barbell Medicine a few months ago that I've been thinking about since then. But before that, one of the other podcasts that you were on, I listened to, there was, you know, part of the reason that you got into musculoskeletal rehab that I wanted to dig up. And it was just about some home care stuff. And I thought it was an interesting chat. And, you know, it's always kind of nice to see what it takes to get people to kind of turn that corner and start helping other people. And so can you take us through that?
Yeah, I mean, so it, like the home care thing was definitely a big part of, you know, me leading into it. That definitely wasn't like the main reason. I'll kind of talk about that first and then kind of really go into what got me into musculoskeletal style, you know, career choices, I guess you could say. So with the home care assistants, that was one of my buddies, his name's Sam, really cool guy. We were about the same age, which has made it even wilder, to be honest with you. He basically dove into a pool at a friend's house, and there was no sign saying how deep it was. And he hit the top of his head, basically completely shattered his C6. And obviously he became paralyzed from the neck down. He was fortunate enough to have some pretty significant like experimental type stem cell work, and basically every rehab you could imagine. Like, so my entire job was, by the time I got to him, he was already able to at least move his arms. He was, you know, doing the best he could to try to stand up out of his chair, but he was starting to get more like tricep, bicep, forearm usage. He was able to move his arms out to the side. His hands were the biggest thing that he was struggling with. So it was hard to grip things. So obviously I cooked a lot for him. And I did a lot of fine motor skills. I drove him to therapy a lot. So we went to OT almost every day. We went to PT almost every day, here locally at the PT school, actually. So that was kind of cool. I got to obviously learn, like meet a bunch of them, which I already knew most of them, because I managed the gym in undergrad as well. So I met a bunch of the PT students who I actually now work with, which is kind of cool. But yeah, I mean, like a lot of the stuff we did with him was therapy-based work. And then one of the main reasons I was also there was to help him. He wanted to do some strength training outside of PT. He wanted to try to get back a little bit more. And that was one of the cool aspects, was luckily I was at least able to do something along those lines. So we came up with a exercise program, mostly upper body focused. We let a little bit more, obviously I wasn't into rehab fields at that point. So I was like, okay, I can do a bunch of upper body stuff, but not really sure I'm, you know, competent enough to help you figure out how to walk again. That's a little harder. Which to this day, he's still not able to fully walk by himself, but he can stand up and, you know, at least take a few steps, which is kind of cool, honestly, like considering the severity of his injury. So he's got a fusion through there. I think he still goes and gets stem cell stuff here and there. But overall, he's made some pretty awesome progress to see from afar. And he's actually still local here at Virginia Beach as well. So that's kind of neat. But he does everything as normal as possible. Goes on the beach, he travels, he does everything like that, which is pretty cool to see. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of like my, I guess, home care, experience that I had right before I went to, Cairo school. But before that, there was a few other significant injuries. I actually had my own spinal cord injury, which that happened when I was a junior in high school. Basically got like 6 stingers in a week. For anybody who doesn't know what a stinger is, it's just a brachial plexus injury. I got hit in the head and the shoulder at the same time, stretched it really, really aggressively. Super painful, not fun. And do not recommend anybody to ever have to deal with that, especially that many in 1 week. Then that Friday night, I got hit hard enough and I just kind of lost function of my arm for a little bit. Ended up getting an MRI a few days later. And basically, I had a swollen spinal cord. So there was no space for my spinal cord or my nerves to basically move at all. Hence why I couldn't move my arm. And then basically I couldn't do anything for about a month. I was allowed to walk really, really slow. That was about it. And then from there I was able to regain some of that. I still have some, you know, residual stuff like nerve damage wise. Can't really feel my shoulder a lot of the time. But you know, I mean, at the end of the day, strength wise, it's kind of come back. So, other than that, it's pretty good. You know, fractured my knee senior year of football because I was stupid and went back. So, it's really about it.
There's a couple of things that I learned in what you just said that I didn't pick up from the other talk. I did not know what a stinger was before.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was like a radiculopathy or a radicular symptom. which I guess it kind of is, but I didn't know that it involved the brachial plexus. And I also didn't know that your friend dove into the shallow end of a pool, because I have done that. And if I had as much hair as you, you could see the scar on the front of my scalp where I got a couple staples from doing the exact same thing, diving into a shallow end of a pool. And you know, my dad ended up taking my hospital bracelet and making a sign at the pool and saying, like, no diving in the shallow end because of that. And I can't even imagine what would have happened if I went down, you know, a similar route that your friend did.
It's definitely a scary thought, to be honest with you. And to see the damage it can do. And, you know, at the end of the day, the cost associated with that, I mean, it's astronomical. You got to think, just from an insurance perspective, like, how much that cost you as the person who went through that. Obviously, you have a few other things happening, you know, some claims and stuff like that, but still costing a significant amount of money to come back from that. Your life is completely altered. Like, obviously, I don't think he'll probably ever truly walk again, but he's definitely making the best of the situation. But yeah, I just can't imagine, because he was like a D3, or D3, like really, really good baseball player up north when it happened, and super active guy, extremely fit, like really took care of his body, and now he's like, I can't do any of that. So it was a very large life altering thing for him. So just the mental space as well was really, really hard, because he went from like, I can do anything I want, I'm invincible, to I can barely lift my arm, on a good day. So yeah, definitely interesting. It's interesting to hear that you've kind of gone through that, and luckily you came out kind of unscathed for the most part, except for, you know, a scar that you kind of reminds you most of the time.
Yeah, my wife might tell you there's some other things wrong with me, but so how do you go from having a spinal cord injury to then feeling the need to pull 500 pounds for 20 repetitions? Like, there's got to be, you know, to give a little context on the conversation that we had, my coach is Cody Mizoraka, who we both know, and is a fantastic physical therapist and strength coach. Mm-hmm. He writes our research review, and I don't think you have a coach, do you?
Actually, currently I do. I haven't really been posting that much. Charlie actually coached me. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's been coaching me for,
this is great, actually.
I think like 8 to 10 weeks now. I could check my true coach, but not 100%.
No, this is good, because it actually helps to kind of clear this path up a little bit, because our coaches are very different, I would say. And what you pointed out was that my coach's coach is also very different in the way that we approach training intensity, at least from looking from the outside, I would say, you know. And so the conversation was that I was having trouble with finding that dog in me when it came to powerlifting, as we say in the biz. Like, I just couldn't get into it. I couldn't find that arousal level that I had before, where I would stand in front of a bar and feel like I had energy surging through me. I couldn't find it, and training kind of tanked, and I was like not having a good time anymore. And I was like, I'm never going to be that guy who's pulling 500 for a set of 20. And so why do I even show up and do this thing when there's other things that I can start doing? And so that's kind of the direction that I went in. And I think I let you know what it was that I listened to in the gym, which kind of spurred the conversation, which was I listened to like comedy podcasts or like educational books. Yeah. And you were like, that's not right. That's not what you should.
Yeah. Very, very far different from what I listened to.
And,
but
yeah. And I was going to say, so the context, the scene that you described in your pre-lift ritual was very different than mine. And if you don't mind, can you take us through that so that we can get like the kind of the different pathways here?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I used to be very similar to you. I used to listen to these motivational like YouTube videos, you know, like the heavyweight kind of stuff on Machiavelli Motivation or whatever it was called.
The Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah, buddy. Lightweight, baby. and then, so I used to listen to those things. I have a very, very large friend group that kind of got me into powerlifting. And we still do a lot together here locally. All of them are still local for the most part. And we all still lift around very similar times. So I see them periodically since my schedule is a little harder to work around theirs. But basically what it started off with was I think one of the, during our conversation, I told you what I listened to. And you know, I do listen to some very sad music. Just realistically, it is what it is. I don't know why, but I definitely veer towards that. Some people would be like, I don't know how you even lift to this. This is very, very sad. It puts you in a weird mental state, but for me, I don't know why. It's enough to put me in a mental state. I never really had, in my opinion, you know, a hard life, to say the least. So it's not like I have anything to pull from my childhood. At the end of the day, my parents provided very well for me and they made sure I did as best I could. So it's not like I, you know, was homeless or anything like that for a long time. And, but at the end of the day, I found that it puts me in a position that mentally I feel, far more, I hate this word, but like, it's way overused now, but like far more resilient, I guess you could say. And it's enough to get me in a space where I'm like, hey, you know, it's me and the weights right now. And that's it. When I'm done doing this set, I'm back to me. Like it's very pocketed kind of intensity, I guess you could say. Cause I could finish a max effort set and I'm going to come out of it. You give me 30 seconds and I'm right back to my wife can hear me from across the gym because I'm laughing with somebody. So like it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, I think that was your eyes kind of like lit up when I told you. I was like, yeah, I was like, do you want to hear something I listen to? And like I showed it to you and you're like, well, this is very aggressive.
It was partially that. And it was also partially that not only did you listen to that music, but you listened to it the same song multiple times. Sometimes. I think you said it upwards of like 10 times in a row or something like that.
Oh, I mean, there's days where I listen to the same song for an hour and a half. Yeah. I don't know. All it's right. Just, you know, like I'm on my way to the gym and a song, I don't know, it just speaks to me that day. And then I'm just like, cool. Like here's my song. And then I just use it until I can't. And then I, you know, shuffle through it from there. So.
And so it was not only that, but it was also that it took you a few minutes of like, don't talk to me, I'm getting in the zone, like doing that sort of thing. And for me, I've been there before and I've done that certainly, but there was a shift, and I actually blame barbell medicine for this, where when I started to get into subjective intensity and like kind of almost like an anti-linear progression, or the idea that we can just kind of continue to do that we would just need to show up and whatever was there and there was no kind of fighting that. I think it was when that switch happened for me where I was off of the starting strength linear novice linear progression or whatever, and it was almost just like, well, if I can't really influence it that much and whatever my body's going to give me is that's what it's going to give me, then I'm just going to do that. And the idea that I'm over the next maybe 30 years, like the goal is to maximize that rather than staring at the floor for 3 minutes listening to Evanescence and like maximizing this session. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from. I don't know if I do that anymore. There's been a large shift since I got into my career more than anything. I don't really have time for that. You know, when I was working at the gym full time in undergrad, and I had like 3 classes for like per semester, like twice a week, maybe. And then I could lift for 3 hours and it not matter. Then like that was a lot easier. Now if I can't get a machine within a 5-minute period, I'm like, I'm moving on to the next one. And then like, if I can't get it literally today, I couldn't get a leg extension for an hour and a half. And I just gave up and I was like, I'm done. Like I can't sit here and wait on this anymore. So yeah, I mean, like I definitely don't like, you know, stare at the floor anymore. Maybe during those sets of 20, I was for a little bit because it was like all I was doing for that day. But yeah, it's one of those things where I've also shifted kind of out of that, and it's more of, I'm just happy to be there most days. Cause you know, sometimes getting in there for an hour is just hard, and it's like, especially when I have, you know, a 9-10 hour day, maybe I've seen upwards of 18 or 20 people that day. And then I know I got to go home and answer some emails and, you know, answer some other clients that aren't in person. And it's like my day turns from a 9-10 hour day into a, you know, potentially 15-hour day. And then I still got to lift, you know, see my wife in there and, like, you know, try to relax at some point. I do like to relax here and there. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting, but I think now I'd have to have certain situations where that would play a role, but I definitely don't, like, you know, smack my head against the bar or anything like that. Like, I know one of our topics was, am I going to war in the gym? Definitely not. But now if I hear somebody like screaming, I like look at them and I go, why are you screaming?
Yeah. I think one of the questions is, and actually that was in the things I want to talk about as well, is like, now that you're not really looking to like progress, does that affect intensity? Because now that you're working stiff, you know, it is different.
Yeah.
Right. And I recently made a huge shift myself, but if you could look back on that sort of intensity where you were in that mental space, what was it for? Like, what was the end goal?
What did lifting
that kind of weight do for you, I guess?
When I was like competitive and like doing that kind of stuff, which I mean, I would still like to, you know, eventually compete again at some point. But the chronic issues with like my legs and stuff like that are just really kind of adding up. And I'm actually just now coming out of another one. And so like, it's frustrating more than anything, but, you know, social factors and then like my stress levels aren't great. So, but back then it was more of the people I surrounded myself with were like, how strong can we get? And you know, like now's the time, like if we're going to do it, like, let's do it. Like we're all going to do it together. So why not? And I mean, like, I'm certainly not the strongest in my friend group. I have a friend who can pull 800 for 2 easy. Like, and he's like 190 pounds. I mean, I have a buddy, someone I actually coach who can rep, you know, over 400 pounds on bench, like it's nothing on 4 days a week on 4 different variants. So it's like, I am certainly not anywhere near the people around me. Personally, I have much, much stronger people around me. So that's really where a lot of it came from.
You're doing it for the bros.
Yeah. You know, it's all about doing it for the bros and that's it. Like,
that's why empires are built
from 200 to 270 just to try to get as strong as possible. And do I regret that now? Yes. But you know, at the end of the day, I wish I could have stayed a little bit lower and just got stronger. But, you know, when you're 21, like nothing really matters and you just go like, yeah, whatever, let's do it. Like, I'm going to eat everything. I'm going to barely sleep. I'm going to take a ton of caffeine and I'm going to go in here and PR probably. And it's just easy to do it at that point. So
I think we're probably similar age. I'm 31. We probably grew up being exposed to similar means of training, like hanging out on bodybuilding.com, looking at like muscle magazines, you know what I mean? So it sounds like you and
those free bodybuilding.com shirts, you got with owners, best shirts ever.
Of course. And so it sounds like we probably had similar trajectories and like going to college, you know, freshman 15 would have been great if I had only gained 15 pounds at that point. if you're comfortable, why do you regret putting 70 pounds on?
It was more of like, I'm comfortable now, I guess you could say, or at least getting better about it. You know, when you get into weightlifting and stuff like that, you know, image issues do pop up just in your mind. And like, I have a lot of competitive friends in bodybuilding and stuff like that. So I see a lot of those components and see what it looks like to be, you know, as shredded as humanly possible. You know, when I was up that way, like it was hard to go upstairs without being out of breath. You know, at 6'1", 270, like I was a large person, but it's not like it's a healthy large person. And it's really more of now I'm shifting towards, like, I'm starting to run now, which I used to do a lot in the past, but now it took probably about 5-6 years of not doing that. And then now I'm doing that and I'm actually enjoying it again, which is really cool. So, I mean, I think that like kind of paired with my lifting, it's more about feeling comfortable with my body and my mental state more than anything. Because I don't have time to stress about my mental state anymore at the end of the day. Like right now I put a lot of everyone else around me onto myself. And I take a lot of the brunt from a lot of my patients. And, you know, at the end of the day, a big part of my clinical practice is having those conversations that people don't want to have necessarily. And for a lot of people, it's therapeutic. And I think that's a large part of how my practice is at the end of the day, I do kind of, you know, come in as a therapist in a lot of situations, and I need to be able to be sound of mind and be physically able to also take on some of those things, because those can really, really wear on you on a daily basis. And it's very hard when, you know, somebody comes in and for an evaluation and we go an hour and I can't even get a word out. And it's like, hey, I'm going to need you to come back. Like, we couldn't even do anything today. Like,
I mean, I haven't been in the clinic for over a year, but I so remember those days where you just got back to back people who are just having a hard time. And it's so odd that you just soak that up. You know, mm-hmm. you have folks crying in front of you because they can't figure out what's going on with their persistent pain, or, you know, somebody didn't do something right, and you just like suck it up as in like absorb what's going on, and it kicks your butt by the end of the day. And then you get to the gym and you want to talk training intensity. I mean, if we talk about, you know, stress is not only physical stress that we apply in the gym, but when it comes to that sort of like full life stress, that allostatic load that happens, I mean, one of the only levers that we can pull is decreasing training stress to make sure that things don't explode. And so I think it's totally relevant to the conversation to be like, just the context with which you're working, being that empath and sucking that stuff up, it's totally reasonable to be like, I can't do this the same way anymore.
And I mean, that's really what it's come down to is, I really try to push the empathy component. Because I've been through a lot of these injuries that a lot of people I see, like I've had the back issues, I've had the pain down the leg. I have it now. Like, I mean, I actively have it. So it's like, it's stuff like I've been through the neck pain. I've been through the tingling down the arm. Like I've been through the mid back discomfort. Like, unfortunately I know what a lot of these injuries entail, and it's like, it's hard for me to sit there and watch, but like, I feel like now I'm trying to gear towards my longevity for my physical component. And so, I mean, at the end of the day, like since I got in my career, like my blood pressure has gotten up there. So now I'm on like a low dose blood pressure medication. And it's like, okay, well, how can I potentially get off of that eventually, or at least make it to where it's like, it stays low dose. And that's really where a lot of like my health decisions have come from here in probably the last year. I really put it off for a while. Just cause I was like, nah, it's not, it's just my stress. It's white coat syndrome. I hate getting my physical at the hospital. It's whatever. And then it just kept being there. And I was like, dang it. I was like, that's not actually what it is.
Did you start taking it at home? Cause that's what I, again, same exact position. I'm just like, dude, these doctors, they're not following the CDC guidelines for taking blood pressure at all. Yeah. It's wrong.
Unfortunately, that's what I was thinking. And then like, I went in just recently and I was like, crap. I was like, it's still high. And she looked at me and she was like, are you stressed right now? I was like, yeah, I just applied for another job for admin stuff. She's like, oh yeah, that'll do it. And I was like, while I was on my medication. So I was like, dang it. So like, I know for me, stress and physical stuff really plays a role, and I'm trying to limit a lot of that. So like, actively I'm trying to lose more weight again and get back down sub like 225 kind of stuff. So yeah,
it's again very similar position. I mean, my heaviest was 265 and I'm 6'3", and so not very far off from where you were at. And now at this point, like this morning it was 230, mm-hmm. And I would love to be 215, but it's such an odd I mean, it goes in waves. I remember when I first listened to Austin talk at one of the regular barbell medicine seminars, she was like, oh, these people, they think because they're muscular and or they lift weights that the BMI doesn't apply to them. And I was like, man, he's like reading my thoughts here. And it was at that point that I like almost immediately lost like 20 pounds because they're like, you know, you can have high blood pressure, you can be obese and not have any issues for the next couple of years, but it's the concern of like the next 20, 30 years of being in that position.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, just like you're saying right now, the focus on longevity has changed the training intensity, or at least the training direction for me, because you can, and you know this, you can spend an hour just squatting, doing five sets of squats, right?
Oh yeah.
And then you just skip cardio and you're like, this is fine. I'm strong. I don't need to do this stuff. I'm training really hard for these lifts. And then your blood pressure is still high, or you still have a 40-inch waist and it's just like not working. And, you know, you and I stand on the same soapbox of preaching physical activity guidelines and being in shape. And then it's like, such, it's so hypocritical. Mm-hmm. And so my recent training change has been, I'm just doing CrossFit twice a week at this point. And that kind of crushes not a few things, right? The desire to have novel stimuli that's fun, but also to do like really high intensity training that I wouldn't normally do in a non-community aspect or just on my own or at all.
Yeah.
But also to go back to like, I'm just not that guy who's going to pull 800 pounds. I was like, well, I can't post that on Instagram. I can post muscle ups. You know what I mean? But it's also like I this sort of change and getting out and talking to people and the push to be more in that longevity space definitely changed how I think about training and training intensity, because for me, it had to go up in a different direction. Like training intensity for me before was just like, oh, I'm just going to show up and do whatever I can do. And I probably hit that RPE, you know, people that look at my videos say it's like I'm way under, but they don't know what they're talking about. It's subjective. They don't know what that means.
You didn't squat that. You don't.
That's
know.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny to hear you saying all the things that go on in my head of just like making the shift to, you know, we're old men at this point and these things that happen in our lives just make training different. You know, I'm curious, like, what do you think training will look like once you're 50? You know, do you think it'll be different than it is now?
I think right now I still lift very similar to powerlifting, but I do a lot more like bodybuilding type additions. Obviously with Charlie, that's a big thing. You know, he wants you to get as jacked as possible and as strong as possible. So I do kind of get the best of both worlds right now, but ideally I'd like to still be doing a lot of the same things. Like, I mean, I still want to be able to squat when I'm 50. Like, it's just something I don't necessarily enjoy squatting. I've had my ups and downs with it. It's caused a lot of pain and anguish in my life, in terms of adductor issues. I mean, I've had a few back issues with it. But like, I still want to be able to do it. I still want to be able to deadlift. I bench pressing, like whatever, as long as I can still press something, you know, it's really more about like, as long as I'm happy with where I am physically and I'm able to do the functional things that I want to do. Whether it's, you know, playing with the kids in the future or just being able to go on a hike and not have to consider like, is this going to really mess me up for like a week? I don't really know. I want to be able to kind of do anything. And that's really like my goal right now. And that's where like the running comes in, the weightlifting comes in, and the weight loss kind of comes in, stuff like that is, you know, I'm trying to be here for as long as possible. Cause I'm starting to learn that time is going by very, very fast. You know, I used to think when I was 18, like, ah, this is so slow, man. And now I'm like 29 and I'm like, dude, are you kidding me right now? I'm like, this is like October just flew by. I mean, this year's flying by. And so now I'm trying to find ways to, you know, maximize my time here and basically do anything to kind of do that. So.
Sure. I just started reading a book, 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. And it's, I mean, no frills about dying. right? Yeah. How the average person has 4,000 weeks on Earth. And the gist is like time management is a sham. How the more we're better at managing our time, just the more work we're going to end up doing, or the more things we're going to end up trying to fit in. And there's an infinite amount of possibilities of things that you could do, but just being able to recognize that you're going to die and that time is like precious, and the it being precious and limited is what makes everything great. And it's the same thing. I mean, I feel like we should talk more often, because I listen to folks like like my dad say, last 10 years I've just been trying to slow down my life because everything's flying by. Yeah. And doing things like training, like being in the moment in the gym and feeling those like uncomfortable feelings helps with that, oddly enough. You know, I'm sure that there are people who want to keep training intensity low because there's some sort of hedonistic advantage to that, because it feels nice, and mm-hmm. and there's this, you know, it's not uncomfortable, but it's almost always been the opposite, at least when I do CrossFit, where it's that feeling of like I'm gonna die physically because this hurts so much that has kept me in the moment, because there's nothing else to think about at that point, you know?
Yeah. You're like, and man, am I gonna make it through this?
And I think that's why that chat we had resonated with me so much, was because when I'm doing two things at once, training and listening and trying to educate myself, it's doing that exact same thing where I'm trying to have two realities at the same time, and it's taken away from both of them. And so I think that was why I was like, oh man, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like I said, my training has changed over time significantly. Still very different. I do listen to the same music still, but you know, it is what it is. I've gotten my work to listen to it as well, so you know, patients get to listen to it. but at the end of the day, like I try to, like you said, kind of like maximize. So I kind of have like caps on sessions at like an hour and 30 if possible. Unless I'm just like there with, you know, and there's a bunch of people and we're talking, and to me that's also maximizing. Like I'm building relationships while I'm there. I love a good home gym, you know, just as much as everyone else, but being able to go to the gym and, you know, right when you walk in, you go, "What's up, man?" And he's like, for all I know, it could be somebody, I don't even know their name, but I talk to him every time at 6 o'clock on a Thursday night. And Rose. I have many, many friends that I'm going to be honest, I couldn't tell you their name, but I've talked to them for the last 2 years at, you know, 6 o'clock every night when I walk in that gym, and like, they probably don't even know my name. Like, and it's,
you just don't know their name, but you know what they bench.
Yeah. And it's like, "Hey man, can you spot me? I know you're a good
one. How's your mom doing?"
So it's like, to me, it's like, yeah, like those relationships are very surface based, but like at the end of the day, like it's still something that builds you as a human. And so like, that's really where I try to get and maximize my time in the gym, even with building those kind of relationships, because those still form me as a better person as well. So, yeah.
I think there's one more thread that I wanted to pull on, and actually forming you as a person segues perfectly into it, which is the influence that the folks that are influencing us have on our training, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Charlie feels like the most intense guy that I could possibly meet when it comes to lifting weights, right? I mean, international powerlifter, drives a Mustang, boxer, you know, like it's just the whole American dream built into one, and he's telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And again, like I alluded this earlier, like I have, you know, my coach is Cody, and his coach is similar minded, where I last week missed like all my whole week of training because I was working and building out things for the course and the mentorship. And he was like, "That's cool.
Yeah.
Like just try and get it next week." And I was like, "Oh, good. I'm not going to get in trouble." You know, it's like such a, like how.
It's always funny when people like apologize for like missing sessions, and I'm like,
living my life. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, man. Like it is literally not the end of the world. And you know, a lot of people would, I'm obviously speaking out of turn here potentially with what Charlie actually gets, but like you said, he is a very intense human being. When it comes to his physical presence, he's the exact same way in person. And you know, he puts in the work. Like, that man works, whether it's with his clients, whether it's his own personal lifting. He does a lot of work, and he does a lot of very, very good work in a consistent manner. And he's very, you know, organized in his time frames, and like, he has certain set hours where he works. And then after that, like, it's going to be tough to get something from him. And so he's like, hey, you know, this is when I work. You have a question, this is when I answer these. And like, I really love that about him. He's been able to separate very well. And it's been cool to see him grow as a clinician, in all honesty, because he's full remote. And now he's in Arizona, but also see his journey back to his most recent nationals competition, which actually resulted in a few PRs after like 2 years of, you know, significant radicular issues. And it's actually really cool to see the his ability to separate. And, you know, I know what he went through mentally, and I'm sure he has probably something coming soon about his experience, so that other people can maybe have some insight to it. But you know, he definitely creates a really cool atmosphere. And for me, and like, I'll text him all the time, be like, man, I just can't get in a day. And he's like, hey, you know, it is what it is, man. He's like, at the end of the day, you're doing the best you can, and that's really what matters. So
I don't know if that's what I would want to hear. It is what it is. You're just not going to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, at the end of the day, like, when I was doing all the traveling here recently, like, we were just in LA, you know, just a little less, about a month ago, I guess you could say. And like, that week was extremely hard, with all the travel and stuff like that. I think I got like one session in, and I was like, man, I just cannot get a session in. Like, I'm working over just to try to save up some extra time, and not use as much time off. And he was like, hey, you know, like, you got to do these things. There's nothing you can do about it. That's life. He's like, all you can do is, when you do get in there, you know, put in the effort, and then that's literally it. Like, put in the effort when you can, and, you know, don't necessarily try to make up for it. Like, you're not going to be able to make up for a missed session, but it's still about stacking those small victories. That's his big thing, is stacking the small victories. And sometimes missing a week is, you know, what you need to stack a victory mentally. And that is just what it is. So
I think I'm going to go out on a limb, because we've been on the same page with basically everything else, in that my training has changed as a reflection of my relationship with training, or my identity when it comes to the gym, right? My training has recently changed from something that is less coordinated and less scheduled to something that is what people might call exercise, right? Mm-hmm. In the attempt to maybe funnel more energy towards something else that I'm trying to PR, which is like a cross continuum, you know, where I'm trying to stack wins here because this just matters more to me now. You know, it's not that training doesn't matter, because I still get that exhilarating feeling once I'm training, or once I hit a PR, or, you know, get a new skill down, but like, that doesn't affect anybody but me. Whereas if I can build a way to talk to a lot of people and get them doing that sort of thing, that it almost just like, it's a different type of training that has taken my attention lately. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, I still think that's just as important. Like, at the end of the day, as long as you're doing the best you can in that situation, and you have other, you know, focuses now, which that's essentially what it is. You're trying to grow a business. Like, being a business owner takes a lot of effort. And it's like, I don't know that personally, but I have a lot of friends who own their own businesses, and it is a lot of effort. And that's just what it comes down to. And sometimes that means you have to miss a week here and there, because you're trying to expand your ability to reach other people. And it's not that it's a negative for you health-wise. 1 week is not going to completely knock you out. Like, if it does, then I don't know, maybe we could probably get something else checked out. Like, that's, but at the end of the day, I mean, I think it's great that your focus is shifting towards those things. And you are trying to, you know, PR your company and stuff like that, because like, that's what it's about. Like, I mean, that's just a different form of growth. Like, it's not a weight on the bar growth, but it's a mental growth. It's a personal growth. It's just a human growth. Like when we stop trying to progress in life and other aspects that aren't just lifting, then we become extremely stagnant. So it's like, why are we not trying to PR other areas of our life if we're so worried about lifting PRs? Like a lifting PR, I can literally walk up to one of my patients and I can say, I benched 225 a day. And they go, wow, that's incredible. And I go, yeah, you know, it's just a normal day. And they're like, that sounds like a lot of weight. Like, and I'm like, I mean, it is what it is. And, but then I go to my buddy and I say that, and he's like, okay, you're gonna like try today. And it's like, okay, that's like, it's the gym. Like,
I curled that last week.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, there's like, you go up to somebody and they're like, man, I curled that. And I was like, oof, that's rough. Like, and so you like, you look at that and you go, okay, it's a very limited amount of people who care about that. And like, that's okay. At the end of the day, I do not care. Like, but you know, when people see you grow in your business and stuff like that, it's like people see, okay, he's not just focused on the gym. Like he loves the gym. He's doing things for the gym. He promotes this kind of stuff. But like, he's also building other things for other people at the same time and trying to also instill these values for them. And it's like, that's a different kind of PR that I think most people don't recognize and acknowledge effectively.
I recognize the irony of having this conversation while you're wearing that shirt that says, what are you going to do? Not train.
That's right.
Oh yeah. Man.
That's why I wore it, you know, just to make sure that we had some interesting aspects.
Just for the irony. Yeah. Yeah. Soon I'll be starting my ending strength where I just take 5 pounds off the bar until I'm dead. But this was the conversation I wanted to have, and it went in the direction that I hoped it would. And so I appreciate it. Is there, let's do one more just for funsies. You're a casual bourbon enjoyer, right?
Oh yeah. Oh,
what makes a good, like what, when you drink and you're like, wow, this is great. Why?
Oh gosh. I mean, there's lots of different things you're looking for too. I mean, I don't know if you're ever in Virginia Beach, then I have like 80 bottles that you could sample, at this point. Unfortunately, my wife is probably not happy about that, but, so I like, what I look for is, not something that's super aggressive or in your face. I don't really get super into the technical aspects. I just enjoy it. It's just an alcohol form that I like. But I'm looking for something that's gonna help me either settle down, have a conversation with somebody, and drink in a slow manner. So for me, bourbon wise, I like the lower proof. Like, you know, 130 plus is like gasoline. Like good luck drinking that enjoyably, in my opinion. So I definitely shoot for the probably like 80 to 110, 115 proof area. I'm also getting really big into cocktails. So like obviously Derek has influenced that. So has Austin. So I've actually drank a lot more cocktail based stuff recently than I have just straight bourbon, or whiskey. And so I'm looking for kind of like the oaky sensations. So like double oaked stuff is usually a little bit heavier, a little darker color, but usually very smooth, has a lot of flavor for somebody looking for like a flavorful, like sip of a drink. So I know that didn't really answer too much. Cause I don't really get super technical into it. I just like bourbon and whiskey in general. Yeah. So.
Is there like a favorite that you have? Cause I feel like I have a couple.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Willett, which, so Willett is one that's not distilled or basically given anywhere in Virginia. So I have to get it secondary, which kind of sucks. But I'd probably say my favorite is a High West, which is out in Park City, Utah. Their Midwinter's Dram is one of my favorite ryes they have. One of my favorite ryes in general, first of all. And then I love a good E.H. Taylor, the Yellow Tube. I like their rye as well. I'm a big rye fan. And then their small batch is really good. And then I also have some unicorn bottles, I guess you could say. They're ones that you're never going to be able to get, basically. There's only like 75 of them ever produced. So those are always fun more than anything, because you're like, this is the last time anybody's going to try this. So
hopefully it tastes like good.
Yeah. So I hope so too. Like it's, but yeah, so I'd probably say like Midwinter's Dram, anything E.H. Taylor, I really like. And then some lower stuff, you know, to me, like Buffalo Trace isn't bad. Everybody kind of knows what that is. I use that for like old fashions and stuff like that. And then, Blanton's, same thing. Everybody knows what Blanton's is, a little horse on there. I got a few of those. And but yeah, I mean, I'd probably say that's probably some of my favorites is the rye component. Very spicy, I guess you could say. A little more spice to it, a little more flavor.
Yeah. I love their bread.
Rye bread is pretty impressive. So
all right. Well, where can folks find you if they want to hear more?
So at the end of the day, I mostly participate in Instagram. I don't really do any other forms of social media. I'm lucky to get on there most of the time. But my Instagram name is cam_barbellmedicine. So pretty easy to find. Bald guy with a beard. That's usually about where anything I post has that. So, but yeah, that's about the only place you can really find me unless you have my number somehow. So
you posted as recently as 19 weeks ago.
Yeah. Super active there.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. It was really good to be here.
Yes. Have a great day.
Thanks, man. You too.